Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Sportland Training and Fitness Sports Talks Podcast, the people behind the posts. Now, constantly, over the last two or three years, all we've heard of is what people are doing in their day-to-day life, in the gym, in their business, and everyone's coming up pretty much with the same things. And you know what? I'm a little bit bored of that. So what I'm here to do is to find out the reasons why people are doing what they're doing. Find out what has scared them. Find out what's put them outside their comfort zone. Find out really what makes them tick, because that's where the magic happens. That's what's exciting, and that's what's going to help you, and it's going to help me push forward in our careers. And you know what? Just have a little bit of a conversation as well while we're at it, because at the end of the day, I listen to these in my car. I want to be entertained. So maybe I can help entertain you. Bye. To talk to you about the sponsors of the show and a few other bits and pieces, so don't fast forward this. The podcast is sponsored by Team Builder. We've got the owner on, we got the CEO of Team Builder on today to talk to you about the journey of the product. So make sure you check it out and capitalize on the 14-day free trial that you can get to explore around the software. Also, I need to talk to you about the Strength Coach Network. If you know my podcast, then you know I'm a massive fan of this and I want you to jump on it. Over 200 hours of video content. This is where I get my CPD done. And what I need you to do, again, is sign up. There's a free trial. At the moment, he's running 12 months for the price of 8, which is unbelievable, with the coupon code back to school. So check that out. Again, I've made this easy for you. There's a link in the bio. Just click on it. And then also, what I want to do is talk to you about something that's coming up for myself. I have progression manuals coming out of my ears for you. And then one that's coming up at the moment is the statistical analysis manual for coaches. This is unbelievable. It is huge. It is coming out and it's going to streamline your data. But also, what I need you to do and make sure that you can capitalize on all of these is click the link again. There's another one underneath the episode. Click on it and just sign up to my announcement list, because that's where it's all going to come out first. Everything that I'm doing, including all my upcoming webinars and the Coach Sportland Tour, which is not going away and it's going to be global this year, sign up to it. Just so you know, just so it gets into your inbox, because I don't want you guessing and wishing and wasting time on Instagram. Whilst I want to give you a load of content, get off of it, okay? Make sure you sign up to my email list to get the announcement as they're coming out and everything else that I'm willing to give to you as well, because there is so much coming and I can't wait. So just enjoy the show. Yes. Right, welcome back everyone to another episode of Sports Talks, Understanding the People Behind the Posts. I am your host, Coach Sportland, and today I am with co-founder of Team Builder, Hewitt Tomlin. Welcome to the show. How you doing, man?
Good, man. Thanks for having me on.
No worries. It's a long time coming, something that we should have done a lot sooner, but I'm glad we got round to doing it.
That's all right, man. Early December, we got it done in 2019.
That's the one, mate. That's the one. So, okay. So basically, for those that don't know, Hewitt obviously is a co-founder of Team Builder, which is one of the online strength and conditioning platforms that I use with my athletes and my training programs. And we basically brought him on today to tell the story about why and where and how he's got to this state and the business that he's developed. If you know me, you know my endeavor, and I'm a big fan of people that want to actually do shit and get shit off the ground, not talk about it, and he's a prime example of that. So Hewitt, over to you. Tell me how it all started.
Well, obviously it started here in the States, and I think back when James is my partner, he's the one who I started it with, and we were athletes in college here in the States. And originally, man, we basically were getting these paper packets from our strength coach for the summertime. And I played quarterback, and our programs for quarterbacks looked identical to defense alignment. Like if there was a conditioning protocol or, you know, a deadlift circuit. We were expected to do the same exact thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, I know, I'm not a strength coach, right? I'm just an athlete, but I'm like, I know something about this doesn't make total sense, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So we do a little digging, right? And James is a computer science guy, so he's getting a good coding. He's a programmer by trade.
Yeah.
We start digging around, and we find out that coaches, strength coaches, are programming workouts on Excel. And unless they were like a crazy Excel wizard, it was really hard for them to write programs for individuals, much less even position groups.
Yeah.
So one day we were like, hey, why don't we create a software that will replace the paper packet for the summertime? Mm-hmm. So originally we thought that we were going to create an app where athletes basically had the paper packet on their phone.
Yeah.
And we're like, that's the money, right? That's going to be the big hitter. This is the big idea. And then after doing a little bit of research, or basically just talking to strength coaches, we found out, hey, the value in this is not just replacing paper for athletes. The value in this is saving strength coaches' time.
Yeah.
We basically found out that strength coaches work long hours,
yeah,
you know, relative to the pay, and that if we could save them a couple hours programming, whoa, you know, we could bring a lot of value to it. So that's kind of how we got started. That was 7-8 years ago.
Nice. Yeah, it's funny how some of the most obvious problems escape us all the time.
Yeah. It doesn't help when you're a dumb college kid either.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But then, and also, innovation's born out of necessity. Like, for me, yeah, from a strength coach point of view, but writing 30, 40 programs, and even like my Excel is not too bad, but it's still incredibly time consuming.
Yeah, it can be. Yeah.
And then when, and also, especially when, exactly, you made the point with different position groups, different needs, you know, injury modifications. You know, I found myself, you'd end up scribbling on people's programs, like changing exercises and writing things down. Yeah. Because when you sit down as a coach and put your programming hat on, you've got to think about all these individuals and try and get the most benefit out of them. And the hardest thing is, you know, to be able to do that with them, not in the room and having that conversation with them. And that's, yeah, huge, because it's the developmental process. And like you say, if you've got the same program as alignment, something's not right there.
Yeah, we figured something wasn't right. And, you know, like, this is probably a good lesson for anyone who wants to start a business. But like, the original idea that gets you really excited may not be the money idea. You know, we thought that when we were in college, Facebook, Twitter, social media was like everything. I mean, it's big now,
yeah,
but like back then it was just coming on the scene.
Mm.
So basically we thought to ourselves, hey, we can make like a social media type platform for athletes, like via strength and conditioning.
Mm.
But that wasn't the big idea. The big idea was a platform for coaches. Like, yeah, it wasn't about creating something for athletes. About creating something. So the original idea that motivated us kind of pivoted. But we had to stay motivated, stay excited about this new idea, because that was the valid one. That was the one that was going to build a viable business.
Yeah, no, that's cool. And then obviously going through that process, so you're 7 years in now. Mm. You know, what, when you're sort of getting it off the ground, like, what, you know, like they say, Apple started in a shed, and all, there's all those sorts of things. You know, talk me through, yeah, how this whole journey, how it started.
I mean, it was pretty similar. We started like in a basement, and after college, we both got jobs.
Yeah.
You know, basically to kind of finance our business idea, we'd work our 40-hour jobs during the week, and then we'd work on our app nights and weekends. And, you know, the way to kind of skip that part is to go find investors, right? You go pitch your ideas like Shark Tank style, whatever.
Mm.
The problem is that the strength and conditioning industry, no one knew what it was.
Yeah.
Like, it's not the fitness industry. It's not personal training. It's not Globo Gym. It's strength and conditioning. It's kind of a niche in the big world sports and fitness.
Yeah.
So no one really understood what we were trying to do. So we just kind of went at it alone.
Mm.
And it probably took us a little bit longer to get off the ground. But, you know, the first thing to do was, man, we had to just get our product in people's hands. We didn't even charge for it. Team Builder originally was free. You, wow, could throw like 500 athletes on there for free.
Mm.
Because I don't know what made us realize this, but in the beginning, we had a realization that coaches using our product and giving us feedback on it was more valuable than cash. Like we would rather take coach feedback than take cash from coaches. Not that we could get cash anyway, but anyway, that's how we thought. But as soon as we felt like the product was good enough to charge, we just picked the price and we got our first sale. Like nice. It was crazy. The first sale is the hardest, right?
Yeah.
Like one, they'll never be harder than the first one. The first 10 are a little bit easier. The first 100 are a little bit easier. And then now, you know, I'm looking over at the office and sales come in every day. So 7 years, it's a snowball effect. And that's kind of like the long and short of it.
Yeah, no, it's pretty cool. Like it's not, like I said, it's good to have these conversations with people that want to do stuff and make a difference and change. And like you said, the strength and conditioning industry is so small. Mm-hmm. But within that ecosystem of that, like, you know, in terms of like a general principle of training, what you're trying to do is find the least amount that you're going to do to get the most out of it. But where strength and conditioning coaches wear this badge of honor of themselves working themselves into the ground. And, you know, because they do work long hours. Like, well, I've got friends in the collegiate system over in the States, and it's in football practices starts at 6:30 and then they're not leaving the facility till 7 p.m. at night.
I know, man.
And it's just trying to get the processes right, because we want to make we spend so much time trying to make our athletes better and our life easy for athletes, but we don't put ourselves first enough.
I completely agree with that. I think when I was first observing, you know, I look back at it, like when I was first starting the business, I was going to conferences and clinics. Every once in a while you get like, you know, an old time strength coach up there. And he, you know, I'm trying to build a business in this industry. And he'd get up there and he'd like, we work long hours. We have no budgets. We have no pay. And I'm like, damn.
Yeah. Get a new job.
I've been hearing that over and over again. I'm like, I'm going to build a business here. Like they just everyone admits they have no budget.
Yeah, exactly.
I see a lot of reasons for that. I mean, for one thing, and Brett Bartholomew and other people talk about this, the supply of strength coaches is so much bigger than the demand.
Yeah.
And sports coaches are demanding, especially here in the States.
Yeah.
You know, the football coaches, football's our most, you know, competitive sport or most well-funded. It's competitive. So football coaches work long hours. They definitely expect the strength coaches to, but then take a strength coach who's responsible for 15-20 sports. 15-20 sports coaches expect a lot of the strength coach. You know, they're going to feel like they're going to have to give a lot of hours, right? Show your work, demonstrate your worth.
Yeah.
And that's a dilemma.
Mm.
It really is, because it kind of forces the strength coach to kind of answer to a lot of people, and I feel like they get stretched thin, and that's in a school, like an athletic setting. But even in a business setting, I see a lot of similarities, because, you know, they got to do all the work. You have overhead, you have a business, you got to clean the floors, you got to train, you got to do the paperwork. It's the same thing.
Yeah, no, 100%. I've got a friend out in the States, and he's at like a D3 school, but there's only two of them responsible for every sport.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's just worked into the ground. It's just, you know, and so obviously, you know, like you identified the big problem, you know, the time saving issues with the software, which, you know, that's the light bulb moments that we can make things a lot more efficient. But then taking it into that next level, as you start building out this program, like what were the other questions that you were sort of asking of coaches and the feedback that you were getting? What were those at the beginning?
Well, what we found out was that, man, strength coaches are unique. No two strength coaches are really alike.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a business problem. We were like, whoa, you know, we can't build a program that pigeonholes a coach into doing something a certain way. So we kind of came to the realization that this software platform was going to be like the most open, flexible platform. You know, it has to be really similar to Excel. Even though we're competing with Excel, we have to kind of make it as flexible as Excel in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
This coach likes to do this program. This coach likes to do this. They call it different things. Like, I mean, we really have to make it so that each coach can kind of make it feel like it's their own.
Mm-hmm.
We came to that realization pretty early. We're, you know, we thought that maybe there were like some industry standards, but quite frankly, there aren't.
No.
Exercise names, completely different. You know, systems, the way we call systems, totally different. So that was a business challenge that we took on. We decided to own it. So I think our benefit is that if someone comes and does a free trial on our software and they are a legitimate strength coach, right? Not a sports coach kind of like doing it on the side, but a legit strength coach, they'll appreciate the software because I think they can see the level of detail and effort that went into making it very customizable for strength coaches. Sometimes sports coaches come to us and they're like, hey, I just want a program. Hey, just give me a system and tell me what to do. And you know, we could do that, but that's not our business model. The business model is to support strength coaches, not pretend to be a strength coach for sports coaches.
Yeah. So there's a rich identity within the software.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you're going to get the most out of the software if you know what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. You see other softwares out there, competitors, I don't mind talking about them, and sometimes their identity is spread thin.
Yeah.
If you want to be a software that's for a CrossFit box and for a strength coach and for a sports coach who just wants a program,
yeah,
you're serving, in my opinion, right? This is just me. You're serving too many masters.
Yeah.
You're spreading yourself thin. You're by principle, you're better at something when you focus on it than if you try to become a jack of all trades. And I've seen a few softwares do that. And I think basically it's just given us reinforcement that, hey, we can really own the strength and conditioning space if we just keep our focus on strength coaches and not try to dabble into other forms of fitness and sports.
Yeah, it's one person, one problem, one solution.
Right.
And it's amazing, you know, within my career transitions as well, that's something that you've really got to stay fixated on, you know, that one person, one problem. And that sort of, that statement and that the meaning for me behind that, I wish I knew that 5-8 years ago as a strength and conditioning coach. Because as a strength and conditioning coach, like when I started my career, I was in charge of the sports science. I was in charge of the supplements. I was doing the rehab. I wasn't serving one person with one problem, you know, like a fit, healthy athlete of a certain position group. It's the same. It's just in a different context. And, you know, it's a really important, like, general rule to use, because if you're not focused on that one thing at one time, then you're just going to go by the wayside. And I mean, I'm dyslexic, so my mind is very difficult to focus on one thing at one time, so I'm all over the place. But it's such a vital rule. And when you think about, you know, one thing that I really draw me to your software is when you show me on the back end, and you've got even got the attention to detail to such as like the wellness, the sort of more holistic approach, the athlete management. And what's nice about that is a lot of time in the pro sports setting, you know, that data goes by the wayside. And my general philosophy is like holistic data-driven training. You've got to know the numbers to help enforce what's going on with the person. And if that person is telling you something within these wellness questionnaires, then it poses a question. It's the yin and the yang effect of it. And I've never seen the wellness being brought into any other software.
Right. Well, we were taught that by coaches like yourself.
Yeah.
You know, that was not an original idea. And although it would be nice to be, you know, Chelsea and have a guy for sports scientists and a guy for strength and a guy for this, the reality is that 99% of organizations with a strength coach, that falls on the strength coach. So I think we recognize that, hey, if the strength coach will be asked to do the sports science, in addition to the strength work and the mobility work, we have to give them the tools to kind of do that, because that's part of the job. And I will say, you know, what you were talking about as far as these different job roles and you know, how effective can you be at these different disciplines, you know, in building a business, in the beginning, we were doing a lot of the things ourselves. And it takes some conscious delegation to get rid of things and delegate them to other people who can then specialize in them. And I thought it'd be easy, right? Like, man, I can't wait to pawn this off on someone else. But if you're used to a level of quality or you trust yourself, it does take quite a bit to kind of delegate different tasks and make sure they're done.
Yeah.
Teaching a task to someone else and ensuring the quality of the outcomes, it's totally different than doing it yourself. It's almost like two different skill sets.
Yeah.
I've definitely learned that. And for strength coaches who have the pleasure or the privilege of being in a management position where they're delegating and managing other strength coaches, I think they'll find that same challenge where it's a different skill to do things yourself and ensure that quality than to teach someone else how to do it and manage their quality.
No, 100%. And like we were talking about before, it just creates another email.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does.
It's just that. Yeah. Like, I use Upwork a lot for some stuff.
Love Upwork.
It's really good. And a lot of the time, I actually used Upwork to help some of my early training programming templates. I used to get Diesel XL guys. I'd hire them. I was like, I need to do this. I need this formula. I don't know how to do it. I'll pay you to do it so we can create the outcomes, such as running sophisticated statistics on training data and force plate technology and stuff like that. But the interesting thing behind that is I used to just end up sending them voice notes and just be like, can you do this, because it goes back to that quality assurance. It's like, it's going to take me 10, 15 minutes to write it all out for you. I can just give you a voice note and then you can do it. And it does tie nicely into that management coaching principles of developing a business, you know?
It's cool. I do the video. I record my screen.
Nice.
Like if I need an Excel function done, I'll do the first one.
Yeah.
And then I'll say, okay, now you know what to do. Now do it for these sheets or whatever.
Yeah.
Upwork. I can't believe you use it. I was actually, what's funny is that there's like a business owner friend of mine who's older, and they have like a document storage business, right? It's kind of like a brick and mortar, not a software business. And I was telling him, I'm like, look, you know, you don't have to hire people full time to do stuff. You know, if you have invoicing that takes 5-10 hours a week, you can get a contractor online to do this.
Yeah.
And they're like, really? You know, do you trust them? I'm like, well, you know, you find people who are trustworthy.
Yeah.
But Upwork, for anyone who doesn't know out there, you know, think about a task that's like a manual labor task, like work that's not highly skilled. But if it takes a couple hours, get on Upwork and find someone who can do it. Take 5-10 minutes to teach them how to do it.
Yeah.
And that's a great way to learn how to delegate and save some time.
Yeah. Yeah. And it costs you $20 and it's not a lot for the time saving thing, especially, you know, the big hit home for the software that you're using. It is to save time. It is to be efficient. And coaches, you know, on my podcast, we talked to other strength and conditioning coaches, like about the problems that they face or other people in business and stuff, the problems that they face. And it comes back to efficiency, it comes back to time. Always it comes back to time, because it's the one thing you can't buy back, you know?
Yeah.
Like, an extra half an hour in bed when you're getting up at 5:30 every day is worth $1,000 a week. Do you know?
It gives me anxiety thinking about all the time I waste on things. playing video games.
But then again, that's your escape. Expensive habit. On a side note, I saw the other day, right, that the guy that won the PlayStation FIFA World Cup won more money than the team that actually won the Soccer World Cup.
What?
Yeah. State of the times.
I cannot believe that.
It's ridiculous, isn't it?
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, ridiculous. Crazy stat.
I think it is crazy. I think people should keep in mind that when we say sports world, we're really talking about the entertainment industry.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like every time you hear yourself saying sports or sports world, flip it around and say entertainment industry, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I saw my first Premier League match, by the way.
You went to Burnley, didn't you?
I went to Burnley.
With Shorty,
I sat with Shorty.
Yeah.
Who's great, man. He's so good. And we sat really close to the field, and I was, like, awestruck. I'm like, these guys are such good athletes. And, like, I've been to NFL games and hockey games and American sports, but just seeing another sport played a different way gave me so much respect for these athletes. But then hearing you say that, you know, the video game guy makes more money than the FIFA team, and I was just watching these guys play.
Yeah.
That really blows my mind.
Yeah.
But entertainment industry, eyeballs. I mean, let's be real here.
Yeah.
You know, I want to, like, we like to rag on the social media coaches who have like the speed ladders in the sand and people doing crazy drills.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they know something about the entertainment industry. We don't.
Yeah. I think they are They are the WWE to the UFC.
That's right. They're the WWE. Yeah,
completely. 100%.
100%. So good.
So getting back into the software and, you know, the development. You said you got loads of members on staff now, and, you know, fast forward. Obviously, you have a lot of presence at, and I assume that you still get a lot of feedback from all your coaches all the time that you're working with. Are there any things because the industry evolves quite quickly? Do you find having such an open platform allows you to adapt the way that you'd service your coaches more freely?
Yeah, it does. It definitely does, 100%. I tell you the other thing that helps is that when you don't have investors, you know, if you think about people who invest in software companies, you know, if you know anyone in your life or your network who's a professional investor, especially in early stage software companies, usually these are high net worth individuals. They have a lot of money. They're not just investing in a particular area. They might be doing a software for genetics, a software for sports, a software for logistics management. You know, those guys don't necessarily care about the strength coaches, the customers at the end of the day. They were investors in our company.
Yeah.
They're looking at the numbers. They're looking for a return. And not that there's anything wrong with that per se, but that will have an influence on product development. You'll be building product that's oriented around maximizing profits rather than maximizing the functionality of the platform for coaches. So I think the flexibility of the platform, that's going to enable us to really grow with the industry. But I think as long as we can stay out of the business of having outside interest in our company, then we'll be better suited for serving the strength coaches in the long run.
Yeah. Right?
Now,
I hear you.
Now, the downside, though, is that, you know, it does help to get money in the door. You can hire talented people. You can buy a lot of advertising. I mean, that does help.
Mm.
So I think sometimes we look at the list of things that we want to build and we feel a little bit behind. We're like, man, there's some really good ideas out here.
Yep.
You know, what if someone can fill out a custom made wellness questionnaire prior to their session and their score funnels them into a pre-designed session for that day that's only revealed to them after they fill out a wellness questionnaire?
Yeah.
That's a baller idea. That idea is just gold, right?
Yeah.
But that's a big project. That's probably a $100,000 project said and done on the technical end.
Wow.
It would be nice to have money to pay talented developers to kind of churn out these features quickly. So I think we have to communicate to our customers that, like, look, we're taking the long road. Rome's not built in a day, especially the route that we're taking. So that's a reality of our business model, is that it's the tortoise, not the hare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, you know, drawing comparisons and parallels to, you know, because what's quite interesting about this conversation is that you're designing the tool to allow me to be better at my job, doing what I'm doing, not spending hours behind a computer. And, you know, we always, you know, when I deliver seminars and talk to coaches, like, you have to be a Plan B specialist. You have to have your Plan B. And what's nice about where the software is and how, you know, how I coach is that, that automation into a regulated session would be amazing. Like, it would be an absolute game changer. However,
there's dozens more like that, dozens more ideas like that. They're all sitting in our office.
Yeah.
We're looking at them and we're just having to pick and choose, you know, which ones to prioritize.
Yeah, no, for sure. I can only imagine. It's like my whiteboard of my stuff that I need to get through as well.
It's just a big queue, right?
Yeah, 100%. But what's nice, it goes back to the sort of quote unquote purist nature of your software. Like you say, it's not influenced by high net worth individuals looking for the finances on the back end. It's for the interest of the coach. And also good coaches will migrate to your software because of the freedom and flexibility, and a good coach will know his Plan B.
Right.
You know, so it can be, you know, it can be changed on the fly when you see the wellness questionnaire. If you've got skin in the game, then you know your Plan Bs and stuff like that. But what is nice that I like is the exercise substitution on a key lift. That's a really nice addition.
For athletes can substitute exercises.
Yeah.
based on how you categorize exercises. So
yeah.
So it, like, if you prescribe a back squat and they can't, for some reason, they can't substitute for, you know, one arm dumbbell press.
Yeah.
They'll have to choose from a list of bilateral lower body presses. So front squat, goblet squat. Yeah. Again, we didn't teach ourselves this knowledge. This is something our customers came to us and said. They're like, hey, this is how we do things.
Yeah, and for that pure example, like, you'll get, like, say, a professional rugby player or a rugby player, like some guys I work with online, and it's like, oh, my back is fucked, basically. I've just been hit 20 times 2 days ago, and I can't squat today. It's like, all right, well, run your substitution. You know, so we regress you to a goblet or regress you to an overhead just to help open you up or something like that. And it's very, it does, well, that, again, it goes back to the paper. You don't have to scribble anything out. And then it's just seamless. It's like, just run the progression that you want to run. And you're,
yeah.
If we can get our hit, we can get our hit. And I was at a presentation yesterday, William Whalen, he was, he's like, they joke around and call him the European Cal Dietz, and he just talks about it's systemic stress that you're trying to create, not the proposed exercise. So if we can get the stress that we need to in a different way, then it's fine. And the freedom of being able, just for the athlete, to go, right, I can't do this today, boom, 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 pick down the list, what do I actually fancy doing? The athlete's got ownership, they're empowered to take control of their training, and then they know that the person who is paid to help them actually gives a shit. Because sometimes it's like, nah, you're squatting anyway, I don't care.
You know, and athlete autonomy, that's like a newer concept.
Yep.
8 years ago, when I was talking to strength coaches, some of those older kind of mentalities were way more persistent where, you know, today we're squatting.
Yeah.
Dude, you're going to squat. And I started meeting some people and they were actually in lower levels of colleges, like D3, D2 here in the States.
Yeah.
And I'm convinced it was because in D1, it's a different approach. You're on scholarship. So therefore you're going to do what we say. You know, it's pretty clear cut. In D3, D2, it's more about, how do I motivate athletes to want to be here? How do I motivate them to participate in my program?
Yeah.
And I think in that regard, D2, D3 coaches probably innovated with a lot of things that D1 coaches didn't. And that's where I started seeing things like giving athletes autonomy of their training program, getting better results as far as motivation. Dude, I was seeing the D3 coaches talk about how if athletes were late to the weight room, they didn't let them lift that day because lifting is a privilege. This is an amenity. Yeah. And if you abuse your amenity, you lose it. And D1 coaches wouldn't do that. They would punish the athlete probably and lift them anyway.
Yeah.
But they don't have the kind of freedom to say, not let an athlete train. The sports coach would say, no, you're training them and they have to train. And it's funny. I've seen that progression take place the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's interesting. I suppose with the D1 schools, they're leveraging the NFL, aren't they? So if a D1 school gets more draft picks, you know, more guys in the combine, it's recruiters, it feeds that business model as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, at the football level. And then you have a lot of sports who are not football in D1. And but the D1 mentality is definitely a separate mentality from D3, because D1 is more like, do as I say. D3 is more like, how do I get this person to want to be in my weight room?
Yeah.
How do I get the best effort without really forcing them to?
Mm.
So it's an interesting concept.
Yeah, my friend who's head of football at William & Mary, Keir Wenham Flat, and then you've got Eric Corum, who's the director of sport there. He was at Kentucky, and then you got
after that.
Yeah, great, great guy. And then you got Scott. Scott's the boy as well. I'd give them a shout out. They're good guys. But they're, you know, he's bringing my friend who's English. He coached international level rugby coached Argentina at the World Cup and has done loads of things. And he's trying to bring in a high performance model into this school. And and the athlete autonomy is huge. You know, teach a man to fish. You don't give him the fish, you know. And it's about teaching those athletes to take care of themselves. And they run a real agile period, like agile programming model, which is, you know, goes into sort of, you know, tie it back into the software. your software is very agile. It allows adaptability. It allows freedom of movement. And the athletes in the program, I was down there for a week and just watching them go through this process. And they don't do 300-yard shoves. They don't do vomit work. And they do pure athletic performance training. And these guys, like, he had a... What was this guy's weight? It was a lineman. A lineman chased one guy down and hit like 21.5 mile an hour. 290. Yeah, he weighed 290 pounds and he hit 21 mile an hour.
That's like a receiver.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. There's a video of it. Like, and that's from implementing this athlete-driven autonomous environment where it's like, you know, he always jokes around. He's like, I'm your daddy. Just let daddy drive. And but then but within that process, it's like they own it. The guy that I work with, who's over at the Falcons, when I first time I met him, we had a meeting before we started working together. And he turns around and says to me, he's like, so what's my training program going to look like? And I was like, well, I don't know. You're going to write it. And he looked at me like, are you fucking serious? I've come all this way to hear that from you. Like, but the idea behind it is that the way that you adapt to the training and the way your mentality matches the training, it's just going to write itself. So yeah. It's like, I know what we should do. I know what we need to do. I'm going to lie to you a little bit in the process to get the best out of you. However, we're picking it all based on you, and you're going to have input. And then it's surprising that we got some very, very good results, put it that way. But he's ended up like 8-9 weeks in. He's like, well, can we try this? Because I feel like this is better for me. Well, absolutely. Yeah. You own your process.
Yeah.
You're in control. You know, I'm just pointing the boat. Absolutely. So when we get guys on the podcast, we talk about this and the evolution of their journey. It'll be quite interesting from your side in terms of, because we always talk about like what's a really interesting, insightful or funny story that's came out over your years of development. So like in terms of you developing Team Builder, is there a story that sort of comes to mind where it's like, oh my fucking God, that happened, or something that absolutely cracks you up, something that, you know, humanizes the whole process, because we're all fucking stupid, really, really, aren't we?
So I mean, I've got a lot of stories. I'll just rapid fire a couple here that I think are just hilarious. Yeah. And honestly, I don't even know if there are morals to these stories or just funny stories.
Yeah, that's
so. All right. NSCA conference like a couple of years ago. For those who don't know, NSCA is the big international strength and conditioning association here in the States. We meet a coach from Alabama, and it's not a football coach, but like Alabama is like the gold standard for athletics, just super successful athletic program. And you know, here we are like a young company, we're in our mid-20s. This guy's interested in Team Builder.
Yeah.
We're like, holy shit, Alabama's gonna use Team Builder. I think we might have been celebrating prematurely. Anyway, we set this guy up with like a trial account.
Yeah.
And he's not like a tech savvy guy, right? So we show him how to build a training program, and we show him how to add athletes to the training program. And basically this guy writes like a random session just to see how it works, right? Yeah. And then on his own, he adds athletes to Team Builder and adds them to the calendar on which the training session's on.
Yeah.
So all these athletes get a training session that is not what they're prescribed. It's not part of their program. They get this Team Builder invitation in their email. Join your coach on Team Builder. Do the training program.
Yeah.
So the next day we see him at the conference, and he is just blistering up, blistering up. Like it's our fault.
Yeah.
He's like, I have a bunch of athletes getting a training program that was not prescribed to them. Do you know how much trouble I can get in? Do you know how bad this is? And I think after the conference, I was kind of emailing with him, and I'm like, hey, really, we taught him how to do some things, and then he did them.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like we went in there and added his athletes and did all this.
Yeah. Right?
He kind of did it on his own.
Yeah.
But we said, hey, look, we're sorry. This is our fault. We really feel bad about this.
Yeah.
And this guy replies, well, I feel bad about the AIDS crisis in Africa, but I can't do anything about it. And I was like, dude, this guy, basically we're just taking the blame here, trying to just like defer to him. Like, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
He's not happy. I'm like, dude, this is one of like This guy is really, really not having it. And needless to say, we didn't work with him, and we're not working with
him. Oh, that's brilliant.
Oh, man.
That's brilliant.
He really ripped us a new one. That was like, I remember like emailing with this guy and be like, I don't even know what's going on here. Because up until that point, everyone had been pretty nice.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's quite funny, though. That is good. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. That's like sending the wrong picture to your mum.
No, it is. And... yeah, exactly. And we were like, and then to think that like the first night we met him, he was so jacked up. I think we had beers that night. We were like, we're going to work with Alabama.
Yeah.
And then like the next day we're like, you're not working with Alabama.
Oh, from up here. Absolutely.
Oh yeah.
But the problem, it was human error. So,
definitely.
That's quite funny. That's quite funny.
Yeah. That's pretty funny. I've had, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, like, on sort of like the other side of it, you know, because we all have doubts and, you know, a big part of, you know, bringing people onto the show is that human element. It's like when no one's perfect. And have there been sort of parts of this journey where you're like, this isn't going to work?
You know what? Yes, but really early on.
Yeah.
Really, really early on.
Yeah.
At some point, I think we were just so convinced that we could make this work because, when we were both working our jobs, James was working an IT role, and I was working at like a tech startup for a company that did facilities management software, right? Like his dream job is not working in IT, you know, for car dealerships and document storage companies. My dream job was not working in facilities management software, doing floor plans, right? So we knew that our jobs were a means to an end.
Yeah.
So whether Team Builder was going to fail or not, you know, we knew that we were working towards something.
Yeah.
And of course, we believed it was going to work, or else we would have pivoted to another idea or started a new business.
Yeah.
I think early on, I definitely had some personal challenges, like coming out of college, like, you know, like you'll speak to young kids now. You know how young kids are really eager and they think they should be accomplishing a lot more than they are.
Yeah.
Or really that they're expected to realistically. I definitely had that out of college, and I thought, you know, I'm falling behind my peers. You know, I'm single. Like, you know, what about me is gonna, you know, make me like a good partner or like a good bachelor? You start thinking about those things, and you know, like all it takes is a couple of things to go wrong, and you start having like a little bit of an identity crisis in your early 20s.
Yeah.
I probably had that early on, and then things kind of stabilized. I think just chipping away at it kind of brings stabilization over time. You start seeing some progress in your business. You know, you start to get a little bit of traction. Quite frankly, meeting someone, you know, she's now my wife, but when I met her back then, she was really supportive of my business.
Awesome.
And I got the sense that she kind of valued me, whether my business did well or not.
Yeah.
That actually does really well for your ego, your psyche.
Yeah.
So early on doubts were there, and I think they're no different from a lot of doubts other people face, whether it's professionally or personally. But over time, I think as you start gaining stability, it kind of snowballs. I think that's what happened in my case.
Yeah, that's awesome. No, I appreciate you sharing that, because I think that, you know, a lot of, you know, so I talked about earlier, some of the content I put on my social media now is a lot more reflective relation to personal conflict and doubts and stuff like that. And I think the more people talk about it, the more it normalizes. And that's an important thing, you know, because we'll have young coaches always put in the intro, you know, have fun for the next 45 minutes driving into the job that you don't want, listening to me talk shit. And the more people can bring their mind around that,
I agree.
Then it's only going to empower them further, you know, because when I got the job that I really wanted, you know, at one point I worked 21 days in a row, you know, 13, 14 hours a day, like, and I was like, holy fuck, this is not what I signed up for. This is what it's meant to be like. And you do have those doubts. You do have those, you know, I worked, I did all my studying, I've done all this to then get told I'm fucking rubbish by a player or something like that. And it does deflect you. It does put you in a certain cycle. And it brings me back to like another sort of trail, because I apply sort of the inverse apply principles of training to life and life to principles of training and business and all those sorts of things. It's like you always want to maintain a really decent average and minimize the variance of that average. If you can just stay on that constant, then you'll be all right. And like, I talked to you about the manual just released. I had loads of success with it. It's like, yeah, but don't sit on that. That's not normal. That's a one-off.
There's a new manual.
There's a new thing coming, and I'll put a post out. It's like about having the people in your life. You mentioned your lucky your wife, the people that will just support you, the people that will want to support you to your face, but not to you, well, not behind your back. But then there's the people when you're riding high will tell you, bring yourself down. And it's kind of like surrounding yourself with good people. And that kind of brings me to sort of the idea around building the team that you've got around yourself. Because I think it's very transferable in terms of how you're creating a team. You're creating something to do for a big picture. And it's about how you're disseminating around that. And is there, you know, I always say, like my assistant is actually sat in front of me. He taught me one of my interview questions. It's like, what can you give me that I can't teach you? And it's one thing that I say to anyone that kind of wants to get involved with me from a working point of view. It's like, what are the things that you can give me that I can't teach you? You know, trust, loyalty, and respect. Those are the three answers that he gave me. And I just want to know your insight into recruitment and building something to help your business.
Yeah, well, when it comes to people in the business, you know, we're a new business, so we're still learning. It's not perfect.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, put a post on Instagram for Thanksgiving. I'm just grateful for my team, but I made sure to note, like, this team's not perfect.
Yeah.
And the people managing it, James and I, we're not perfect. We're still learning.
Yeah.
But I think I've learned some things over the years. Like, for instance, I actually kind of refrain from saying that, like, our office is a family. Mm-hmm. You know, you might hear that sometimes, especially in small, close-knit offices.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, if you truly love, you know, I think it's like a proverb or something. If you really love something, let it go.
Yeah.
Like, if you really, really care about your employees and your teammates, if they get a better opportunity, if they work themselves into a better situation, be happy for them.
Yeah.
Let them go.
Yeah.
So I try not to create, like, this sense of loyalty to the point where they're staying here, you know, working beneath themselves. I hope to develop them into really talented workers that expand their opportunities. And hopefully we become so successful that we afford them the best opportunity.
Yeah.
But in reality, it's a big world. And, you know, the opportunities are abundant. I think I learned that the hard way when my brother actually joined our company. You know, first, it's hard to work with your brother.
Yep.
But he left after, I think, maybe 6 months to pursue an opportunity. And I didn't handle it that well, man. I think I took it kind of personally.
Okay, yeah.
And I shouldn't have. I should have been really happy for him. And instead, I took it personally that he was leaving me, right? And that was my first big lesson. Like, that's not right. You know, that's not really... Are you really caring for your brother if you're upset that he's leaving you when he's pursuing something that's better for him? So that was a lesson for me. And I think now we do a better job in the office. Like, I think it actually stimulates them to work harder and kind of develop as people, knowing that they're trapped here. They don't have to worry about me kind of making sure that they're 100% team builder or die. You know,
yeah.
I think that's just not realistic. So that's one thing as it relates to loyalty. Trust, you know, I we haven't really talked about that a whole lot, but I think if they trust us, you know, that's probably a good thing. And we've built that trust through action, coming in early, leaving late, you know, not working 6 hours and asking them to work 10 hours in a day. That's not a good way to build trust or even loyalty for that matter.
Yeah.
So I think we're probably carrying over a lot of lessons that we learned in sport, right?
Yeah.
If you had a good sports coach growing up, they taught you these things.
Yeah.
It's not rocket scientist. No. Show up early, you leave late, you do right by your teammates. It's kind of the same thing here in the office, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's good. I like that. And yeah, you know, for me, you know, with loyalty builds trust, you know, I think the mistakes that are made on along the way, if they're made with good intentions, it's fine. You just want people that can make decisions. And it doesn't, if you, you know, say it on the field, like especially with rugby, because it's a chaotic game, it's just like, make a decision. Because if you stand still, you're getting whacked. You know, yeah. You've got to do something. And as long as you do it with the right intention, then you'll be all right. Everything will be all right in the end, you know?
The equivalent of that in the office is like turning a blind eye to things.
Yeah.
If something's bothering someone in your office and you can tell, you have a decision to make. You could either kind of address it and you may not have a solution, but at least you're addressing it.
Yeah.
Or you can turn a blind eye to it.
Yeah.
If you're willfully ignoring things that you know are bothering people or could be addressed, you're not building a lot of trust because you're basically ignoring, you know, someone's issues or someone's concerns.
Yeah.
So, you know, we had a meeting the other day and I told them all, I said, look, everyone's concerns are valid. If you have a concern about the color paint on the wall, come and tell me.
Yeah.
I might not paint the room, but I'll listen to you.
Yeah.
Let's not bury things under the rug.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully no one does come and, you know, complain about the color of the wall or the color of the carpet.
But, hand him a fucking paintbrush then.
Yeah. I'll give him a paintbrush is what I'll do. Let's put it all out there. Let's not bury it.
Yeah.
Let's not bury the concerns and for now, a good policy. I may regret it later.
But you know, it's empowering individuals, isn't it? You know, and I've got a story on the kind of like on the flip side of that, but it's about, you know, like sometimes turning a blind eye for the right reason or manipulating a situation that you know, it's kind of like the white lie principle, right? You know, and so so the day before a game, it's when all the non-selected players have to train. And they call it, there's an Instagram account called the bin juice, basically, because they're just not needed. And like the juice at the bottom of the trash can.
Oh, water trash.
Yeah. So that's what they call themselves. And so we're then, they're having to do this training, and one of the guys oversleeps, and he's not in the... he's not in the gym when he's meant to. And I was the assistant, and the head coach at the time, the head, he was very like military, and I'm very not that way. And he kind of like would look round and make sure people had the right socks on or were wearing the right shorts. And if not, he would tell them off if they weren't. So this guy's overslept, and I'm like, it's punished enough that you're not playing on the weekend, and then you're going to get punished because you've overslept anyway. I was like, right.
Yeah.
I said to one of the lads, I was like, phone him. Give me a phone. Call him up. I was like, you need to get over here now. And he lived in one of the houses, which was just by the pitch. So I'm like, get here now as soon as possible, because otherwise you are fucked. And the gym was sat there, and the changing room was adjacent. And he comes running across the field, like getting changed on the way. And I can see him coming. And as I look right, the boss is walking to come into the gym. Right, to check on the session and check on the numbers, and he's running across, and I've just stepped forward out the doorway, and I'm like, go that way, because it comes round on a loop. The boss comes into the gym, looking around, checking kit, seeing who's there, and he says, oh, where's this player? And I was like, oh, he's just in the toilet. Don't worry, you just missed him. He's just gone to the bathroom. And so he walks to the end of the gym. As he walks to the end of the gym, this player comes through the gym door. And I just say to him, it's like, get straight in the rack. So he walked straight into the rack. He didn't have a clue what he was doing, just racked off this weight, started squatting, put the bar back on, turned round. The boss walks back. He walks out the rack and he's like, oh, good morning. He's like, how you doing? Yeah. Nice to see you. Boss walks out. And I was just like, that saved a whole lot of problems, but it was like doing right by the individual as well. And he's just like, you can't write that stuff.
And what do you think the athlete thought of you after that? He probably came up to you and was like, you're the fucking man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, he bought me a beer on a Christmas night out. So that was,
good for him.
Yeah.
It was a strong man. I mean, that's a big time. You know, I'm not a G.O. Joe myself, but my wife's actually had to teach me, you know, sometimes you stick up for people even when they're wrong.
Yeah.
You know, like being the most objective person in the room is not always the best thing, right? Sometimes you just, out of morale, you stick up for someone, and you know they're wrong, and you know you're on the losing side of things, but at least you stuck up for them.
Yeah,
I'm like, you know, I'm like, damn, that's good stuff, because
yeah,
otherwise, like, You know, you're not judge and jury all the time. If you want to be, people will just think of you as a robot, a G.I. Joe.
And
it's not always the best thing.
No, yeah. And it's kind of like navigating that moral compass, because literally, like, if you're in that situation, you defend, because that comes down to your loyalty to that individual, right? So, then you defend them. It's like, then the conversation after is like, I stuck my fucking neck out for you. This stuff doesn't happen again. I stuck my neck out because I care about you. And that's it. You know?
Do you have any siblings?
Hmm?
Do you have any siblings? Brothers?
I got a sister. Younger sister.
You know, so it's kind of natural with siblings, right?
Yeah.
Your sibling might do something wrong.
Yeah.
You'll probably stick up for your sibling.
Yeah.
You know, you might have to back, you know, I have three brothers.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, but one of us is always going to be wrong in some case, right?
Yeah.
So you're going to get your brothers back. And you might have to deal with whatever it is. It might be a tussle.
Yeah.
And then afterwards you have to be like, hey, man, that wasn't cool. But at the moment, you know, you got your brother. And that's natural. Like, that's like the inner moral compass that comes out naturally.
Yeah.
So it's not all black and white, you know. It's you got to navigate it.
Yeah. Cool. I think that's a perfect way to finish. For people interested in Team Builder, it's the Team Builder Instagram.
Team Instagram. Everything is Team Builder. We don't. We got in early, so we didn't have to do like, you know, get Team Builder or
you know,
Team Builder at Team Builder everything. Facebook cool. Team Builder.
Nice.
If you can't find it, you'll need to get it. You know, you'll have to get with the time.
exactly. And then, obviously, as always, anyone listening to it, you give them a 2-week free trial with the, which is all linked into the bio anyway, that they can get some insight into the software.
Yeah, if you go to the website, you'll see buttons for it everywhere. It's pretty easy to do. Is this podcast a video podcast, or will people see the video?
We'll put the video on YouTube, but yeah.
Okay, just because every podcast is like two white guys looking at each other, like, I'm going to change up a little bit. I'm going to show this is our office here, so you can kind of see the guys working away. Three guys, those are the programmers, the developers are the ones, they're smarter enough, they're doing crazy wizard shit.
Nice.
And then, this is our little place, and then I'm in the break room here, so we're just, you know, just two rooms. This is like for breaks, eating, watching TV, and then this is where all the work goes on in there. You can see our little rack over there. This is where we, you know, do some of our training.
Nice.
But yeah, man, this is Team Builder. This is all there is to it.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Yeah. All right, so let me wrap this up, and then I'll hit the stop on the recording. I'll talk to you in a second. So thank you very much for everyone listening. Share, subscribe, whatever you want to do. Enjoy your day at work, and I will speak to you soon.